We are studying the book of Revelation for those that are visiting with us. And I thought it might be good and helpful if we revisit a couple of these stories in the Old Testament that involved very severe consequences for anyone that would not do what the power at that time, human power, and the powerful man in these cases would tell them to do that would be contrary to God's will. That's what we're seeing taking place in the book of Revelation when we see that the Roman government is persecuting the Christians, calling for emperor-type worship. We haven't gotten to all that, those things, but they're found in the book. And so I hope that what this will do in complements to the things that we'll be talking about is understand how the Bible gives us these great stories of those that were able to withstand that kind of opposition to the very conviction and the very truths that they knew. And we've got two great stories to help us with that. You have a choice, like we talked about this morning, about peer pressure and fitting in. The choice comes down to, am I going to obey God, or am I going to and please Him, or going to be, do I want to please men? And peer pressure is when we fall prey to the pressures of the world to get us to conform to their likeness as opposed to standing firm in our convictions. And we're going to see where these Hebrews, these Jews, though in a difficult situation, stood firm. These are not made-up stories. The book of Daniel is challenged today to say that because it contained so many things in the future that it must have been written much later. No, Daniel was getting revelation from God and he wrote it down. We don't need to force that book later because God was answering his questions and he's writing about future things. And because God is involved, it's going to be right. And so these stories are real. And you don't read about them, I don't believe, in your history books. I had world history a couple of times in my educational life, and I don't remember really that being discussed much about these great kings and meeting God's people. That tends to not meet with human history, although we know that the scriptures are true. The consequences that are going to face them is physical death. A king has proclaimed something, and yet Daniel is going to remain firm in his faith. The same is true of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Their faith is going to be challenged, and they are going to stand firm. So I want us to begin with, let's talk about their character. We're going to go back to Daniel chapter 1, and we're going to look at a few verses around our scripture reading, and I appreciate Steve reading that for us. So we're going to go to Daniel chapter 1, and we're going to see the type of individuals that Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are. And it's interesting that that is their Jewish names, and yet we know them more by their Babylonians, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I don't know, in the scriptures use that. That's the it introduces them with their Hebrew name and tells us that their names were changed. But I've often thought for a young boy, Abednego was pretty neat as opposed to Azariah. So maybe that has stuck some too from the standpoint of the catchiness of that. Although they are referred to as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the book more than they are there by their Hebrew names. Let's begin in verse 3. Daniel chapter 1, verse 3. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understanding, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine in which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of the that time they might serve before the king. Well, the first thing that you learn is they are smart, they are wise, they are very quick learners, and they're good looking. And I know that because the king gave order that this is who he was looking for. And so this is King Nebuchadnezzar, and if King Nebuchadnezzar told you that I want you to go and I want you to find these type of individuals, and he wants to pull them from specific places to assimilate them, which I mentioned this morning, to bring them into their culture. And what that does is when you assimilate them into your language, into your literature to know it, then your identity begins to disappear. You no longer, and that's what we saw this morning, remember the language of Ashdod's? Well, they were getting assimilated into the pagan world because they were marrying the pagan women and they were giving their sons to their daughters and vice versa. And so they were losing their identity as God's people. And so that's what the Babylonians and what King Nebuchadnezzar wants to do. So if I was given this charge, then I'm going to go out and I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to, and how you do this, I don't know, but they would have to have been tested in some way to find out how smart they are. And there's more than just smarts. There's a lot of people who have book smarts, but they just aren't very wise. Sometimes we might say they just don't connect all the dots in the common sense side. But wisdom is taking that knowledge and the ability to use it to solve problems. It's the wisdom we need to discern between good and evil. So they have this ability. And I couldn't help but think that I failed in all of these. I mean, if I wouldn't have been in the running because I'm not a quick learner. I have to really pound it in there. And once it gets pounded in, it tends to just fall back out and I got to relearn it. And so, but this is who is picked. So these four men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel, have met the requirement. And I want you to notice also that this is going to be a 3-year training period. Can you imagine 3 years you've got to go through this training before you can serve the king? Now you might be allowed to be in his presence and serve him. So this isn't some willy-nilly just pick these people and be done with it. No, this is going to be 3 years of training, verse 5, in preparation for them. And that makes you think about the arrogance of a king that would say, before you can even be around me to serve me, you're going to have to go through my 3-year program and be able to meet all the requirements to be even able to serve in my kingdom the way that I would have you serve. And then they're told, and this becomes a part of our story, that they're going to receive the provisions, the daily provisions of the king's food and wine, and that becomes a problem. And that's where we understand that this is going to take conviction to obey God, or are you going to obey Nebuchadnezzar? So this starts very early on when they are taken into Babylonian captivity. They are part of the first wave of Jews that are taken back to Babylon. They're in the city of Babylon. This isn't like Ezekiel in the second wave. These are people who are brought right into Babylon to assimilate them into the Babylonian, the Chaldean culture. And so we read in verse 8, which was our scripture reading, that these king's delicacies included food that would defile. So this must be unclean food that they could not eat according to the law of Moses. Now, you're in a foreign country, and you might just be able to say, well, why do we have to worry about the law of Moses? That's obviously, we've been completely turned upside down, and things have changed, and here we are. But they've got a choice to make now. And what you begin to learn is those that were taken and chosen are very serious about their faith in serving Jehovah God. I find it extremely hard to believe that Daniel was part of the problem that led them to into captivity in the first place, that he was involved in all kinds of idolatry. No, it seems to be the opposite. He has a strong conviction and knowledge, and it may come back to the fact that he's smart and he's wise and he's a quick learner. He's serious about what he understands. He's making application of it. So he understands that the law, whatever the king's delicacies are, that's going to put me at jeopardy with God. I'm going to defile myself. It reminds me of Peter when he says, I can't eat that. That's unclean. I've never eaten anything clean. And that God is teaching him a point. You remember in his vision, don't you call unclean what I've called clean. And that was all to introduce the Gentiles into the gospel. But we've got in verse 8 this king's delicacies, and now Daniel did something that is so very important that each of us have to do and we must learn to do. And it ties very well to what we're trying to also learn in the book of Revelation. The Christians in the book of Revelation, Daniel here, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego here, has to do what? Well, it says in verse 8, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. That is, I am making my mind up and taking my stand here. And I mean, these men are going to do this to say, I am willing to die on this hill for this conviction. And so they take this stand. They make up their mind. He made a firm decision. He purposed. I noticed the ESV uses the word resolved. They were resolved. And just like Daniel and his friends, we too have to, with purpose and with resolve, and be firm in our conviction and not go against the will of God should anybody ask us to do so. That's to be our conviction, is that no, God's will supersede all other wills. And so that's what we see right here at the start, is they're willing to say, okay, we've got a problem, and I'm not going to do this. Well, you're in a foreign city where the most powerful man that has conquered all this land is saying, you got to eat of my delicacies. Well, the providence of God comes into play, because just like Joseph would become good friends and close to maybe the jailer, or, you know, same here. There's a relationship that's built. I've seen it in my life. I hope you have too, that because of your convictions, that maybe the person that is there will say, you know, take, for example, I know you're not going to cheat us, and I know you're going to come back, and I know you're going to do exactly what you said you were going to do. Yes, go away for 2 hours, and I know you're going to stay 2 hours late to make up for the time that you're away. By all means, I'm not worried about you. You know, I don't know. Think of a scenario. But that comes through relationships, and that's what we see here, where the eunuch, he's kind of troubled at this in the plan to not eat those things, and they are tested. But what I want us to understand here is that how hard would it be? Just think with me for a moment before we get into the two stories. How hard would it be when what you're confronted with now is you either bow down to this golden statue or you're going to be thrown in a fiery furnace if you hadn't made up your mind at the start in something right here at the beginning? In other words, they set a precedence right here when they first get there. They made up their mind. And to me, when you see them now confronted in the next two stories, in Daniel and the lion's den, you already know what they're going to do because of who they are in the convictions and the strong faith that they had. Before we move on, I want to look at Psalm 119. Psalm 119, there's a psalm in this long psalm in verse 115. It says, "Depart from me, you evildoers, for I will keep the commandments of my God." That fits well with this morning. Pressure. No, you evildoers. I'm not going to cave to this pressure to fit in. I'm going to do the will of God. And that's what you see here. And so the Christians in the book of Revelation, they're going to need this same purpose, the same resolve in their times of persecution. And we need to as well. Back in chapter 1 of verse 15, kind of the rest of the story, and at the end of 10 days, their features appeared. So you remember they got to say, no, don't make us defile ourselves. Let us for 10 days be tested and eat what is right. And so he agrees to do that. And at the end of those 10 days, they were better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom and Daniel and understanding and all visions and dreams. So they just grew and grew and grew and grew in their understanding. So they're going to rise through the ranks, as we will see in the stories. Well, here we are. We come to chapter 3, and we've got the story of King Nebuchadnezzar coming up with one of his great ideas. Can you imagine me saying that in his presence way back then? Oh, is this another one of your bright ideas, Nebuchadnezzar? Say that in 2026. Would I have the courage to look at him and say that way back when? Today I know the rest of the story and I know who's going to be put in their place. But when we turn over to Daniel chapter 3, we've got Nebuchadnezzar deciding he's going to make this huge golden image, 90 feet tall. And I've brought lessons before where I tried to show you water towers around here and there, and next time you see it, that's about 90 feet, so you can get an idea. And it's unusual to me that in the base it's about 9 feet. So it's very slender and tall based on the cubits that we're given here. But it's 90 foot and like 9 feet and just, you know. So here you got this image. And he calls all the big wigs together. That's how I'll just describe him. He calls all these big important people around him and he says, and when they arrive, this is what's said in verse 4. This heralder cries out, "To you it is commanded, O people, nation, and language, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn and the flute, harp, the lyre, the psaltery, and a symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." There it is. The king has had the message ring out. And now you're a Jew in a foreign land. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are being commanded, you bow down when you hear that music to that statue that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. What are you going to do? Well, our minds, thinking like we tend to do, we formulate a plan. Just go along. Just go along. Who's going to really know? Who's going to really know? Well, we know the answer to that. You know, something else we try to do, and you might think this is smart, might get away with it for a while. Music starts playing. You just conveniently find yourself ducking behind something or hiding behind something. Nobody will see me. I just won't do it, and I'll just hide. What was the first commandment back in Exodus chapter 20? Turn back there. We did this morning when we looked back in Deuteronomy. What was God's command about marrying the people of the land? Very first commandment. Verse 2, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image of any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. You're a Jew in Babylon, and you just been told, when you hear this music, you bow down to that image I put up. What are you going to do? You see, you've got what God says, and if you're true, if you're serving the true and living God, then you know that that's the command you've got to obey. But that's when your faith is tried. That's when your faith is challenged, is when you're confronted with these decisions, these choices. What am I going to do? I mean, the challenger says, if the heralder says, the king's telling you that if you will not fall down, you will immediately be cast into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. And so the music starts playing. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you know who they are? Look at verse 12. Let me get back there. I moved away. Let me get back real quick. Back in Daniel. Lost my place. Daniel chapter 1, look at verse 12. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Oh, they're officials now. They're officials over over province in Babylon. So they're ruling. And it's been brought to King Nebuchadnezzar's attention that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're not doing what you told them to do. What are you going to do? King is commanded to bow down. Decision to make was started way back in chapter 1. They made their mind up. We're in a difficult situation. We're in a country that's not ours. We're being punished by God. But we're going to serve God, no matter what. And you know how the story goes. They said, we will not worship the golden image. Well, verse 13, Nebuchadnezzar, he's in a rage. He's in a fury. And he gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought them to him. So here's some of his officials, and he learns that they're not doing what he has commanded them to do, and he's fit to be tied and angry. And so he calls them in. Is it true, verse 14, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn and the instruments, he says, if you won't bow down and worship the image which I've made, but if you do, that's good. But if you don't worship, you'll be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. I guess what I want you to see at this point is it got real. You know, you may be not, you know, think about them, okay, it's music, plays, we're not doing this. And then all of a sudden, people start noticing. And now you stand before the king. We would say now it got real. And that's where, again, you go back to where we're studying Revelation, and they're saying, okay, you got to bow down and worship the Caesar, the Roman Caesar. You got a choice. People understand, you going to do it or not do it? Well, that's when people's faith caves. That's when it just crumbles. That's just when it becomes, you know, oh, kings, next time that flute, harp, I'm sorry, I'll bow down. That's not what happened. That's what makes this such a wonderful story, because you got three individuals who know the consequences, and it's immediate, and they're standing in front of the king, and he's told them, do you understand the rules, the law, the command that I give? And it's all verified. It's not like they say, oh, we weren't in town, we hadn't heard. It's no. And so he's furious, and now you have to understand, all right, are we going to compromise, or are we going to have conviction? And I want you to notice his haughtiness in verse 15. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? haughty Nebuchadnezzar going to meet the true and living God a few times in his life? You know what they're willing to do? Instead of bowing down, they have a faith, a strong faith, a faith that is confident, a faith that is bold. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in verse 16 answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace." Nebuchadnezzar, think about the kind of faith you have to say, we got bigger problems than you if we don't obey our God. You're nothing. I mean, just think about what your faith has to be. But then we are flabbergasted that they go on to say, "And he will deliver us from our hands, O king, but if not..." Can you get there in your faith to the point that should you be persecuted, if God chooses not to save you, you're okay with that too? You see, it was never a doubt in their mind who they were going to serve, whether they lived or they were thrown into the fiery furnace. And he's already taunted God. It reminds you of Goliath taunting. And David, it just drove David nuts. He couldn't believe that nothing was being done. And you can just see these three men when they're told that, "And who is the God that can deliver me from your hand?" Well, they say, they certainly know he can. But if not, "Let it be known, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up." We're not going to do it. Faith. Strong faith. Strong faith. Are they superhuman? They're not. But you know who they are. They're good thinkers. They're smart. And that's why I say God's people are smart. Because we have understood and have figured out what is life about. It's about being true and serving the true and living God who rules everything. And his son, who is king of his church, head of his church, king of his kingdom. And I want you to think, these men, because they're good thinkers and full of knowledge, you think they knew anything about Abel? We could just turn over to Hebrews chapter 11 and go through all those. You think they knew anything about the faith of Abraham? Do you think that they could say Abraham was told to offer up his son? This is nothing. Do you think they would know about the faith of Moses, who was in Egypt because, you know, he grows up in Pharaoh's house? Joseph, think about the faith of Joseph. I mean, on and on and on, these Bible stories that help us develop strong faith, the type of faith that's going to help us all to be faithful unto death. But then you go forward, and then you've got Daniel. And there's a plot specifically carried out against Daniel. Now, it is not just highly likely, based on the kings that's ruling. Daniel has spent many, many years in Babylon. Some have estimated he's probably 80 years old, somewhere in 70s, 80s, by the time the lion's den comes around. He is not a young whippersnapper. He's an older man, and his faith is being challenged yet again. He's one of three governors who are over the 120 satraps, and that is their princes. So three governors that are ruling over 120 different men. And those 120 men would answer to the three governors. So Daniel's really gotten up there. In fact, Daniel is really standing out among the three to where Daniel rises above, because if you look at verse 3 of chapter 6, read that with me, Daniel chapter 6, verse 3, then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Isn't that amazing? Here you are. You were brought over there because you've been captured, and the plan is to assimilate you. He's under a different king now. It's King Darius of the Medes. So the Medes have conquered the Babylonians. And he's gaining, climbing the ladders, just like we saw Joseph did. Well, that didn't set well with the other two and the 120 princes at all, that Daniel is kind of setting himself out. But did you catch something about Daniel that's very important? What kind of spirit did he have? An excellent spirit. I think that we could safely say Joseph had the same excellent spirit. Good, and today we might say great attitude. Found himself in difficult situations. Daniel's found himself in difficult situation, but he's got an excellent spirit. And of course we know God's letting him visions, and we have the stories of he's interpreting dreams. God is blessing him, no doubt. But that doesn't set well with the other governors. And they had a huge problem. Look at verse 4. So that the governors and satraps sought to find some charges against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. We got to get him. I can't find anything. He's a good man, excellent spirit, doing everything well in the kingdom. Top notch. We'd say today he's great for the company. He's a great worker. You know, does what he's supposed to do. Stays on top of things. However you want to look at that. He's very well, doing very well. But here's where they say, but you know where we're going to have to hit him? Look at the next verse. We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. We're going to have to challenge his faith. We're going to have to put an obstacle in front of him that makes him have to make a decision. Is he going to follow the Medes and the Persians and King Darius, or is he going to follow his God? That's where we're going to have to find him and trip him up. So they formulate the plan, as you know. They formulate the plan that is going to challenge his faith. And you know what they did? In verse 5, they went to the king. We've read verse 5. But they go to the king, and we don't have time, but they go to the king. They come up with this decree. If the king signs the decree, the law of the Persians, it can't be changed. So if they can get him to sign this, it won't be changed. And so they said, O king, they go to him and they say, for 30 days, no one can petition any god, verse 7, or man for 30 days except for you, O king. Take that to King Darius, and he thinks, that sounds pretty good. Nobody can petition anybody but me. And he signs off. Well, the first thing that happens is, when Daniel heard that, you know what Daniel did when he heard the writing was signed in verse 10? You know what he did? He went back home. He went and hid in his closet, made sure all of his windows were shut, and he made sure that he was going to petition God, but nobody'd know he's doing it during that 30 days. That's not what he did. Verse 10, Daniel knew that the writing was signed. He went home. He went in his upper room with his windows open towards Jerusalem. He knelt down on his knees three times that day, prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since his early days. That's how we'll get him. And you can just see them looking at his window, can't you? Look at him. Look at him. We got him. And the story is amazing, because what happens is they go to Darius and they let Darius know that Daniel's not following the decree, how did Darius feel? That's very interesting. The relationships that these godly men built with these rulers is very telling. And why they rose, because of who they were, their convictions. Our convictions can take us far. So after appealing to his ego, Daniel does exactly what he's told he can't do. Is he crazy? Is he stubborn? No. Daniel is serving the true and living God. And this relationship is built on faithful service. So when the king learns that Daniel has violated this, he spent the rest of the day and into the evening trying to figure out how he can get out of the mess that he had made. In fact, in verse 14, let me read verse 14, it says, "And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself." That's the difference than Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar had a rage. This king says, "I messed up. I got Daniel in trouble." And he's just hoping he couldn't figure out a way to get out of it. And those others kept coming and saying, "You know you can't change it. Can't change the law of the Medes." So Daniel is thrown into the lion's den. And he seals the den. And before that, he calls out, says, "Your God whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." And then he seals it, puts a signet. And then he can't sleep all night. Toss and turn. Gets up the next morning, cries out, "Have you been delivered? Has your God delivered you?" And what does Daniel say? Daniel says, "The lions, God has sent an angel, and he has shut the mouth of the lions. I'm alive." Darius he's been so upset, and now he's so upset with the men that did this to Daniel. You know what he did? Threw them, their family, their children, threw them into the lion's den, and before their bodies hit the ground, it says they were torn all apart by those lions. You can't write that just as it happened, just exactly as it is recorded. To conclude, I want to read verse 25 to the end of the chapter. King Darius wrote, "To all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble in fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, steadfast forever. His kingdom is one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Kept right on going. Now, I want you to think about the long-lasting of your faith. You see, if they'd have caved at the start of the lesson, back in chapter 1, we'd have a whole different story, wouldn't we? If they would cave at the start, then when they're told you're going to be thrown into a fiery furnace or thrown into a den, what kind of faith would you have then? I mean, you're going to die. Well, they had that strong conviction. And I want to say as we close, people are watching you. They're watching to see, are you going to compromise your faith? The Christians in Revelation, they're going to need a strong faith to endure the tribulation that's coming quickly upon them. And people are going to be watching them. Are they going to cave? Are they going to compromise their faith? And we have to learn to have that kind of faith, this type of strong faith, that when it is tried, it will stand firm. And others may see that and glorify God. Well, you might be here this afternoon and you're not a Christian. Why not start there? That's where you have to start. That's the new birth. That's the beginning. Washing your sins away. All sin separates you from God, and you must do something about that. Jesus died so you can have that forgiveness. Wash your sins away in his blood. Maybe there's sin in your life now as a Christian. It's until you die, you've got time to repent. You have time to make things right. If we can help anyone in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.